All right. Happy summer. It's Jessica Stewart. It is Monday, June 27th, and this is the October 2015 cohort. This is Coach the Coach 4, Class 3. We're winding up here, and I am with the Cool Cats, a.k.a. Group C. And I am, as always, very excited to be here. Very excited. So we're going to do a check-in, like I like to do, just to get everybody's voice in the room. Hello, Aida. Welcome, welcome.
Hey, hi.
We're just getting started, so. And there's hope. Oh, goody. I was like, oh, I hope we have a lot of people. And we do. Yay. So I'm going to do the one-word check-in. We're going to go around the group. I'm going to go from the bottom up. So, Katrina, you get to go last today. Lucky. So we're just going to do that one word or one sound for how you're doing right now in this moment. And I don't think Catherine is on the line, so I will start with Lisa.
Accomplished.
Ooh, nice. And then Adrian, I don't think she's here. LaSalle, are you here? Nope. Dee Dee.
Frazzled.
Frazzled. All right. Well, we have space for frazzled. No worries. Aida, yay. I hope you're feeling better.
yeah, I am feeling a little better. I guess I would say I feel a little ambivalent. I don't know.
that was like the perfect. I think I'm ambivalent, but I'm not sure. That's perfect. Sarah.
Kind of like a. Oh, that would be my sound.
Like an
A little heavy. Maybe heavy.
Yeah. I can feel that. No worries. Joanna, what's a word or a sound for how you're doing right now?
Optimistic.
Awesome. Tessa, I don't think is on the line. All right. Hope.
Sad.
Okay. Well, if you want to talk about that, today is the day to do so. So just let me know.
Thanks.
Rachel? Yeah. Rachel's? I don't think she's on the line.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, hey.
I joined in 2 minutes late. I'd say my word is spent.
Okay. Boy, it's like the dog days of summer already. And then last but certainly not least, Katrina.
Hi, I'm curious.
Okay. All right. So here we are. This is our third class. Just as a reminder, we skip next Monday because it is a U.S. holiday, and then we will meet again on, I believe it's the 11th. But today we're going to continue with our journey of where we've been going, just meeting our client wherever she may be in her day. And we've gotten a few clues where people are already with our one-word check-in. But before we get into coaching, just kind of reading the room, if you will, I'd love to just hear how you guys are doing. I'd love to hear if you have any questions, if you're feeling like you need some support or some motivation from me or your fellow coaches. I just want to hear how things are going. Any questions or comments?
I have. This is Dee Dee.
We've got two. So Dee Dee, I heard someone right before you. Who was that?
Sarah.
Okay, so we'll do Sarah and then Dee Dee. I'd love to hear from you next. So Sarah, what's up?
So I've had a tough couple of weeks, just been in not a great space, and I have really wonderfully built up a number of clients that I have regularly. And so I've been working with them, and the funny thing is, of course, when I'm coaching them, I have been in the last 2 weeks, I am really able to focus on them and get out of my stuff. But what I'm noticing is that I'm feeling inauthentic after, and I don't know if that's just a thought, feeling like I have all this stuff going on and I'm feeling so heavy and awful and down and in some darkness, and I'm not, and I know I'm not supposed to be sharing that with them, but it feels a bit like, how can I be coaching someone when I'm feeling all of this in my own life?
Right, right. Yeah, it's such an interesting place to be, because there can be a little bit of a limiting belief or a limiting thought around this idea that I need to have my shit together, or I need to be at the top of my game in order to coach someone or to support them. And I think there are certainly times in our lives when we absolutely we need to kind of be in that fallow period where we need to retrench and maybe rest, spend some time gathering our energy again. But I also think that, you know, for me, it's just a reminder that I don't need to be like 10 steps ahead of my client. Sometimes I need to be just one step in front of my client.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some of the best healing that I've gotten for myself has been through being a mirror for other people. And so my suggestion for you, Sarah, is just, I'd love for you to spend a little bit of time before each session just getting out a little piece of paper and asking yourself, how am I feeling right now? And getting really clear and kind of getting out some of the feelings and just doing a little check-in. I'm feeling like a fraud, or I'm feeling tired. I'm feeling like I don't want to do this today. And sometimes it's in that simple act of acknowledging where we are in our own journey that helps us become more present to our client and less in that sort of spin or in that hook of, you know, I shouldn't be doing this, or I'm not in a place to be helping people. And sometimes it's just, that's just enough to kind of get us over, you know, noticing that thought. I notice I'm having the thought that I shouldn't be doing this right now. So how does that feel so far?
It feels much better. And you know, it's so interesting how these thoughts get me, the limiting beliefs of, well, I'm in a bad space, so I have no right to be helping other people right now. But because I've heard it so many times before by master coaches saying, you don't have to have your life perfect to coach. But when I get in that place, it can feel so heavy and true. And so and continuing to do the work around it. But just hearing you say that really, really helps.
Well, and there are times when you really do need to rest. And so maybe there is something where you aren't honoring your own body signals, that, you know, really this is not a time for you to be with others because you need to be present for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, more often than not, it's been more about my, you know, because we're always in process of growing and learning and changing. There are times when we get stuck and we kind of catapult ourselves out of the change cycle, sure. But for us to be done with our journey and expect like, oh, well, I'm going to be done and then I'm going to help someone else, it's just, you know, this is not a fixed point from where we work. We don't work from this fixed sense of you know, I'm all done growing, you know, we're good here.
Right.
So it's impossible for us to ever be completely done. We might be in square four. We might be like, oh, I can handle this change. This is good. And we might be so deep in square one that maybe it isn't good for us to be helping other people. Maybe it really is taking energy away from our own sort of healing. I just think the feeling is very different. My guess is you're probably more in that square three space, and so you're feeling a little exhausted from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what I found is that helping the people I've had to stop helping are the family members, the people in my immediate circle.
Yeah.
And I am able to help the people I'm coaching, and I actually feel really much better after, and I feel really good. It's the thought work around it that I'm feeling like,
you know,
who am I to be doing this? So thank you.
Perfect. Yay, thank you for sharing. I'm going to guess you probably helped a lot of people just then, so thank you. So, Dee Dee, what's going on with you?
Hey, well, I had a really good coaching session. I'm coaching people for free right now, just trying to practice, and I'm working with one woman, and I like that Byron Katie works, so I had a good session with her. She was a double yes, so I continued on with her, and we did some turnarounds, and I asked her to find the evidence for the turnaround, and it felt good. Like, I had a good session. I'm going to see her this week again. So would I just organically just let her talk? I mean, I'm wondering if I just follow up with how she's doing with that thought that we worked on, or I kind of feel like, well, what's the next step? Because I haven't gotten that successful and that far with somebody who was like, yeah, I guess
so.
Cool. And
Yeah, usually a good so Chris Brandt talks about this as sort of the art of the segue. How do we transition from active coaching into helping somebody actually implement it into their lives? And so in the session itself, there is that opportunity to ask, you know, how are you going to work with this or implement whatever, you know, what's something you can do to reinforce this thought over the next week or so? And so actually giving them this active sort of action to help them really pay attention and reinforce the belief, the new belief, sort of the new turnaround. The other thing is I think it's totally okay, and I've done this before, is when I feel like we've really hit kind of pay dirt with something, where we got to a point where there was a big shift, or even when there was like a lot of frustration or anger, even sometimes at me, that certainly happened. I will actually check in with someone via email and just say, hey, I just wanted to check in and see how it's going. How have you been working with this sort of new belief or this turnaround in your life? And are there any questions? So is that what you're asking? I mean, I think it's totally.
Yeah. I was, because I've been thinking about her, and I'm like, I think I should actually check in with her before we would do another session and just ask her how it's going. Right.
Yeah. You know, what I found in my own career is that my clients love it or hate it when I check in. And it's actually great in both respects. They love it because they're like, wow, you were thinking of me? Gosh, thank you. And sometimes they'll be like, oh, I'm so afraid to, essentially I'm afraid to tell you that I haven't made any progress, or I went right back into the shitter with my thinking. And both are really great opportunities, because the first one, you really reinforce sort of the positive nature of your work. And the second one, you also reinforce the positive nature, because you get to really tell them, like, hey, rule number one, be gentle with yourself. This is a process. We can't expect that this is going to take exactly. It's a little bit like a whack-a-mole. It's like you get one thought, kind of worked, and then it shows up someplace else in your life. That's great. Perfect. We'll follow up in our next session and talk a little bit more about it. So I think as a coach, you kind of – you're reinforcing sort of the relationship. You're reinforcing sort of the gentleness that's required in this process, and you're also giving them and yourself an opportunity to continue the relationship so that they rebook with you, so that they don't disappear. Because my clients love to disappear, because I do a lot of square three work. They just love to hide. Because sometimes they'll put me in that role of enforcer, and I'm like, why are you hiding from me? And they're like, oh, I'm scared to tell you that I totally did what you told me, you know, what we agreed that I shouldn't. And I was like, you can do whatever you want. Thank you, mama. Right? So it's kind of, there's all this benefit. And I think if you follow up with someone, I think it's a warm, fuzzy feeling for sure. And it's just good business. I mean, you get to keep engaging with a person to the point where at some point she'll probably start paying you. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. Great.
Was that helpful?
You.
Is that what your question was?
Yeah. No, I'm definitely going to email her today.
Good. Perfect. Okay. I would encourage that with everybody. If you want to grow a practice and someone reaches out to you and they're curious, like, someone contacts you. So this will happen once you're certified and you're on the Martha Beck page. Someone will email you. They'll want to do a one-on-one session, or, you know, like maybe a little 20-minute check-in, whatever you offer them. And it's a great chance for you to figure out if you want them to be your client, and it's also a great chance if they want to be yours. One of the things that I really want to encourage you is to always follow up with someone. If you get like a full body yes, like this is my client, don't be afraid to follow up with them a few times, because people do get busy, their calendars get full, and it's not usually a comment on you if they don't, if you both felt like, you know, if you definitely felt like that energy was really good between you. I've just seen folks kind of like be shy to follow up, and I would encourage you definitely keep following. I mean, don't become like a crazy woman about it, but certainly
yeah.
follow up with people if they want to work with you. So anyway, that was really for everybody. So cool. Any other questions before we get into coaching?
I think I have one, Jessica. This is Aida. What if you have a client who is really unable to tap into their feelings because of their religious environment or beliefs? Like, have you ever run into someone who's just maybe so wrapped up in rhetoric? I mean, do you give up as a coach, or how do you handle that?
Gosh, that's such a great question. You always ask me the hard questions, Aida. I love it. You know, I think that it's their process ultimately. And so when someone gets to a point where I hit all sorts of resistance, like I'll go to the left, I'll go to the right, I'll go head on. The question is, it's like, really, why are they in conversation with us? Is it because they think they should be, or, you know, are they afraid of some consequences? So I'll actually get to the root of why they're engaging with me in the first place, rather than trying to work around the issue that's on the table itself. Does that make sense? So if, like, they're coming because, well, do you have a specific example that you could share?
Sure. I'll share, I guess, like, one really quick example. Like, I have a friend who maybe is like early mid-30s, is married, and has been feeling a lot of pressure to have children, but she herself doesn't feel like she wants to have children. And so we were talking, and I think in the religious sort of tradition that she's in, it's very I guess she's like a Southern Baptist, and she feels very guilty. And so we were trying to get at, like, what her feelings are, like, about not having kids. And, you know, she couldn't get past the point where I think it's what she's heard from other people, like, oh, I'm feeling really selfish because I don't want to have kids because I just want to have, like, my own time. I want to go on, you know, as many vacations as I want. I want to do things whenever I want, like, it sounded very much like what she was being told, or, you know, about her feelings versus, like, what she was actually feeling herself.
She wants all of these things, but she's afraid, essentially, of the consequences if she actually shares them. Is that what you mean?
Like, well, I mean, I think she wants, she doesn't want kids, so in sharing that she doesn't want kids, I think, I don't know if she has heard from people who are like, well, why wouldn't you want kids? Is it because you're selfish? When her and I were talking, you know, I was trying to understand, like, or trying to help her even understand what her actual feelings were about not wanting to have kids.
Yeah.
Like, is it out of fear? Is it out of some deep, you know, memory or something like that? But all she could do was kind of stay at the surface level where, oh, yeah, it's because I feel like I'm really selfish and I just want to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it. Does that make sense? So we-
it does. I mean, I guess for me, the first thing that I'm kind of curious about, and I don't know if this will resonate with her, is like, yeah, she's selfish, but not in a bad way. I mean, I think this is where subtlety of language becomes really powerful. I remember there was this session where Martha was coaching somebody, and the woman was like, oh, but I don't fit in. I don't fit in. I'm too different. And Martha was like, yeah, you don't fit in. And that's okay. It doesn't mean you can't belong. And it's kind of like taking this concept that has been just demonized, this idea of being selfish, and saying, okay, well, what's so bad about being selfish? Why is that a bad thing? How can we make it okay? Because in many ways it is. I mean, it is about the self. I want these things. I want a good life. I want to feel good about my life. And it's sometimes even just by recognizing that as being an inherent gift that you get to give yourself, that you get to kind of follow your own self-interest, that then can loosen up the cultural entanglement that she might be kind of so belligerently unable to kind of see, because she's so focused on the selfish, I want to be selfish, but selfish is bad. It's like, okay, well, maybe let's just work with this idea. Yeah, you're selfish. Great. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, I don't want you to, like, be like, yeah, you're selfish, but really embracing the gift. How can being selfish be a gift?
Mm-hmm.
And playing with that concept of language and maybe working with the language, because then when you kind of loosen up the mental hook around the word selfish, you can kind of then go underneath and feel the feelings of what does it actually mean? What does it feel like to be selfish on a good day?
Yeah, and that's kind of like what I ended up doing with her was I don't feel like I modified like the ideal day exercises to, you know, as she's older and she doesn't have kids but she's on her favorite vacation, or she does have kids and she's, you know, like maybe.
Well, I wouldn't even get into the idea of it's hard for someone who doesn't have kids to maybe imagine having kids without all of sort of the baggage around, because she doesn't want to have kids right now.
Yeah.
And so ultimately, rather than trying to play with her the idea of her having kids, it's really about what is it that's, like, why is she afraid to admit it? And trying to bring in kids when she very clearly doesn't want them right now,
mm-hmm.
becomes just another sort of source of tension for her, is my guess. I don't know. She's not my client. But I guess I would, kind of play on the field where she doesn't have kids and what does that look like in her life, rather than even bringing, because it sounds like she's really clearly, I don't want them right now. Tell me where I'm off base, but that's the message I'm getting.
I think there was some of that, but then, I mean, I think as we talked a little bit more, I think that she wasn't really averse to that idea. I think it was more, it ended up being something like she had made a decision in the past to get married to somebody because it was, all her friends were doing it. It was the right time. It was this.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up being a decision, I think, that she didn't really...
think about.
She regret it. And, and I think that that's what she was struggling with underneath all of it, was like, if I make this decision to have a baby, is this also something that I'm going to regret?
Yeah, I mean, this is the challenge when we start getting into theoretical futures that haven't happened yet and we start worrying.
Mm-hmm.
We get out of the very, just the reality of our present circumstances, and it almost feels like talking about a baby when she's regretting even having gotten married is just a fundamental conflict, because maybe, and I don't know, again, I don't know her, but maybe if she were in the right relationship, it wouldn't even be a question.
Right.
Like, maybe this is all a decoy. She doesn't actually want to have the real conversation. Like, I'm just not happy in this circumstance, period.
Yeah, and that's where I feel like some of the religious stuff seems to come into is that, well, I can't get divorced because, you know, like my parents, my religion would frown on it. And so I just, it's like, I feel like it's something that I have run into with two of my friends. And it's, as a coach, I just don't know how to get past like their religion.
You might not be able to. That's the thing. It's like, because you have to, it's what I call impossible conditions for success. In that essentially it's like, I don't want to offend my parents. I don't want to rock the boat, and I want to live a life that's completely against my upbringing. That's impossible conditions for success. Something has to change because they've created sort of like one too many requirements for success. And sometimes just pointing that out, it's like, okay, so let me just make sure I'm clear. You don't want this. You don't want this, but you do want this. How do those three things work together? Really? I don't understand. Help me understand. And I think sometimes that's the most we can kind of do, is just kind of showing them the false dichotomy they've created in their life, and that there's beliefs in each of those that just are fundamentally in conflict with each other.
Mm.
I don't think it's an easy solution, which is probably why it's feeling a little bit like, huh, where do I go? I actually think it's very, it's like scalpel work. It's very slow and very deliberate, where you just sort of slice open and kind of look at each of these beliefs. So, does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think when they, I mean, do you see there's like three fundamentally different conflicting belief systems happening at once, and you might have to tackle each one over and over and over again and show how they don't work together.
Mm, okay.
And fear is driving it, and it's like, okay, well, what are you afraid of? So I think it's very delicate work.
Okay.
I think you're up for it, though.
it's
complicated because it is very complicated in their mind. Because they, do you see what I'm saying? They're holding belief systems that fundamentally don't work together.
Okay.
And we can talk more about it later if you want, but I think that's probably a good tactic, is just to kind of start laying out how these belief systems don't work together.
Okay.
Really, like, well, what do you want to do about it? Not you, but them.
Yeah, okay.
So, anyway, I don't know if that helped, but hopefully it gives you a little bit of an in. Cool. All right, so let's do some coaching, unless there's any final burning questions. Okay. So... I got Dee Dee. You volunteered to be a coach or a client. I'd love to hear who would also be willing to partner with Dee Dee. Aida, have you coached in a while? I don't know if you, not for a while, according to my records, madam. Would you be willing to coach today, with my sweet loving hand holding yours and guiding you?
Or my palms are like sweating already, but okay.
Okay, and Dee Dee,
and I promise mine won't be as complicated.
Mine's not complicated, except fundamentally my religion and my belief systems do not jump. No. So here's the deal, Aida. I don't know how much you've picked up from my style, but I'm really here to support you 100% in helping you support your client, and so. There's no test. I'm here to support you. And so however you want to use me, let me know. With that said, how can I support you today? Do you want to just call on me when you need me? Do you want me to jump in? Do you want me to let you go for a while?
I think
Are you already panicking? You're like, I can't think. I can't
think. I'm panicking a little. I guess if you, you know, I guess, see shark fins circling around me, then come and help.
Okay. So here's what I just want to encourage you to remember is that we're all friends here. Dee Dee is a friend. She's just here to kind of be supported by you. And I just want you to play with this idea of playful curiosity. So this is not a test. So I'm just, you know, you're just showing up. You're having a conversation, and I'm here to support you. Be curious. You know, what's going on in Dee Dee's life? How can we support her? And if it helps, take a few deep breaths. Get back in, climb back in your body.
Okay.
Actually, why don't we all do that so we can create a really loving environment for our coach and client. We're just going to feel our feet on the floor. We're going to remember everything is okay. Take another deep breath. And one more. We're going to empty out any judgments or self-deprecation that might be going through our head. We're just going to remember we're here to serve. Palms up. How can we help Dee Dee today with the issue that she's having? And when you are ready, you take it away, Aida.
Hey, Dee Dee, how are you?
Hey. I'm well, thank you.
Good. So tell me, what is going on in your life today that you reached out for help?
Well, I feel like there's this mental habit I'm having around I don't have enough time. I feel, and I'm not sure if that's actually the thought. I feel panicky around work. I get panicky if I'm not quite sure. Like when things arise, like my instant reaction when a lot of emails come in, and I work with patients, and I work for a doctor, so I'm the navigator between the doctor and the patient. And so I get a lot of emails of, like, stressful emails. And they're all, like, if I took one each at a time, it would be fine. But and I know that. But, like, for some reason, I get panicky when things come in to do. And so I don't know if my thought is there's not enough time, or I don't know how, like, I don't know, like, I feel like my thoughts are, can I get this done? Can I handle this? There's so many things to be done. Like, I get really panicky. And so I'm wondering what that is. Instead of embracing, like, these are patients, they need my help. You know, I can handle it, you know, but for some reason there's this, like, little panicky person inside of me that's like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I don't like it. I want to be happy at work. I want to be stressful.
Okay. So can I can we go back to that moment, like, you get into work, you go to your computer, you see all these emails from people, and tell me, like, when you start seeing, you know, the subject lines or whatever, where does your focus go when you start to read those emails? Can you go to that space with me?
Yeah. Let's see. I want to shut off my computer.
Okay.
I just literally, yeah, like, I have this, like, oh, my God, I don't want to deal with this.
Okay.
But it's not that bad, but, you know, and it's got to be dealt with. And I guess I feel, okay, so I, I guess
what is leading you to that thought that, okay, this has, let's, so I hear like two thoughts here, like this has to be dealt with, and then I don't want to deal with this. And if you, we can like sort of look at those two thoughts, this has to be dealt with. Where do you feel like you are either hearing that thought in your body or, where is that thought? Do you feel like, where is the sort of the genesis of that thought?
I think it's more, you know what it is I feel like, okay, I feel like I have to deal with it right then. Like I have to immediately respond to everything and it has to be dealt with immediately and taken care of immediately, which I have the whole day to take care of things.
Okay.
So there's some kind of, there's something in me that's like reactive, like, oh my God, like they need a response now, that I need to deal with this now, and then I get stressed out.
Okay. And then that part of you that is thinking, oh, I don't want to deal with this at all, can you tell me a little bit more about that thought? And I'd love to explore that with you a little bit.
Yeah, almost like I think, like, their problems are my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I almost take on, like, oh, my God, it's my fault. I need to take care of this. And
where does that come from, that their problems are your fault? Do you have like any thoughts about that or clues about where that thought might have come from?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure where I picked that one up from.
Okay.
Except for I have, you know, I do learn on the job a lot of things because insurance and medical, all this stuff is a moving target all the time and it always changes. And so I feel like, oh, my God, I should have known that, or I've got to take, you know, there's just a lot of panicking because of, you know, I guess because it's got to be somebody's fault, right? I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know where that comes from.
Well, and that thought, like, it has to be somebody's fault. I mean, I've heard, you know, a lot of different things so far, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so this job, you're learning on the job, right? And I assume that your employer also knows that. Is that correct or no?
Yeah, of course. And I'm never in fear of my employer. It's always in fear of the patient. Yeah. The doctor is like, I mean, she would, yeah. She's not like that. That's the good part of it.
Yeah.
It's all my head stuff, I think. Yeah.
And so the fear is that the client will not be happy with your work. Does that sound?
Yeah, like it's like, oh my God, you screwed up. It's not even they're even saying you screwed up, but it's like, oh my God, unhappy people, panic. something went wrong.
So when you think about, let's just maybe like one client instead of like, you know, like 10 or 15, so maybe let's focus on one client and they're unhappy with something that has happened. Can you walk me through in your mind what you think will happen if you don't get not able to fix whatever they need?
Yeah, that somehow I told them the process wrong. Like, I told them incorrect information, and it's going to cost them a lot of money because of me.
And let's say you made that mistake, and then it does end up costing them a lot of money. And then what happens?
I could possibly lose that patient or the doctor that I work with. They could be very unhappy, and they could go to another doctor.
Okay, so theoretically that patient maybe comes back to the doctor and says, I'm very unhappy because of this. And then this doctor, who we already know, is really understanding and knows that you're learning on the job. She comes back to you, and what does she say in your mind?
She would just be like, make sure, you know, you've got to make sure that doesn't happen again. Here's how we fix it. You know, and she's definitely a good, you know, we've solved some problems that weren't that's never happened, but it's almost, okay. It almost happens like all the time. And then I realized that, you know, it's just misinformation from the patient, and they filled out something wrong or whatever. So
let's just pause for a moment. I just want to check in with you, Aida. What do you think is going on with your client in this scenario?
I think my hunch is that TD feels a lot of pressure to impress her boss, who she really looks up to, and I think that some of that fear causes her to panic when she's dealing with these clients, because each client then seems like almost like a time bomb, like, okay, is this, or a minefield or something, and so my hunch is that if I could have done this session a little better, I think I would have probably tried to help her get to a place where she could maybe see that heightened fear of failure is causing her to feel panicked, and therefore maybe causing her not to be calm and focused.
Right. Okay. So let me just ask, Didi, how does that resonate with you? How does that feel?
Well, it's good, because I kept trying to coach myself around it, and I couldn't. I kept thinking I had this limiting belief of there's not enough time, or I might get it wrong. But I think that's kind of the piece that I was missing, is that whole, like, I'm going to fail. I'm going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to look bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought you were doing a great job. I just wanted to be mindful of time too, and watch where we kind of get too far into theoreticals, kind of theoretical situations, because it it helps when we're working with a client to work with very specific situations, very specific instances versus sort of what we think might happen, which is kind of what I was talking about with your
yes,
with
okay.
your other client, is like we're getting into a future that's never going to happen, and so we kind of rev it. I think what's happening here is we're dealing with Dee Dee's lizard fear. This is probably a top 10 tune that comes up a lot for you, Dee Dee. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, I would say, yeah. You mean the fear of failure?
All of it. All of it. I
looking,
can't get this done.
Looking bad,
I can't handle
failing.
This.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I can't. I don't want to look bad. I don't want to deal with this, but it's got to be dealt with. I have to deal with it immediately. Mm-hmm. There's just this swirl around. My hunch is the moment that you open your email, it triggers just a fight or flight response. And you're like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, I got to take care of this. Oh, my God, mm-hmm. oh, my God, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of the reason I think we're dealing with a lizard here, Aida and Dee Dee, is because notice how circular the logic starts to become. It's like, Dee Dee, it sounds like you know that this doesn't make sense because you know it's happened before and your boss has been super understanding and mm-hmm. and rarely have you ever actually done anything that was incorrect. It was mostly on the part of the client. And yet that fear persists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just doesn't. It hasn't made sense to me. It's like,
well, it doesn't make sense because it's not. It's not you.
Yeah,
it's not your logical thinking mind. It's your lizard mind.
Right.
Like, oh God, if I lose this job, I'm going to be in a poorhouse, and then I'm going to be on the street, and then we're going to be in a van down by the river, and oh my God, oh my God. Right. It's sort of like if we start to take it to its logical or illogical conclusion, it becomes. Mm-hmm. It's not real. Tell me where I'm off base on any of this, but this is kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah. No, that makes total sense.
Cool. So, Aida, does that make sense of kind of what I'm talking about? Did you get that feeling as well, that it was sort of a rat hole that could very easily, you know, like it just kind of spins and spins?
Yeah. No, I do, and I did. Honestly, I think sometimes I get a little lost in terms of I got the hunch of where Dee Dee was, but I never really know how to either help her to see it in a way that where she could
do something, like work
I
with
feel
her.
Like in where she could like recognize the thought herself, like, okay, this is my lizard thought, which is what I feel like I'm supposed to help her do, because that's to be more empowering than me saying, okay, Dee Dee, I think you have this thought, like, I mean, but I don't know, I still don't feel like I totally know which way to go or what's the right way.
Yeah, this is the power of throwing a hunch and the whole hat, hypothesis, antithesis, thesis kind of model, kind of going back to the beginning. The whole point of it is that it kind of cuts through, because part of what happens is that it takes us a long time to kind of weave around and to show people versus just, sometimes that's powerful, but sometimes it's like you want to combine that with just, here's my hunch. Tell me where I'm off base. Tell me where I'm wrong. Does that resonate? And then give them, you know, pause. Give them a chance. And you create wonderful safe space. I don't like hearing you beat up on yourself. I just want to be clear. I think you're doing a great job. I think it's just kind of giving yourself a chance to put that hunch out there, put that hypothesis out there, and then just give them a chance, give your client, Dee Dee, a chance to say, huh, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way. Or, no, that doesn't resonate because here's more on the situation.
Okay.
And what you do is when you interrupt sort of that circuitous sort of line of questioning and kind of going in deeper and deeper, is that we don't want to spend too much time in theoreticals because there's no action there because it hasn't happened and it never will.
Okay, okay.
But what we can do is when we have a theory, so my hunch, my theory is that every time that email is a trigger for your client.
Mm-hmm.
It is so much, it is not about the email. It's about what she makes the email mean. Tell me where I'm wrong, Dee.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
And so then my job is to help her see that and then help her figure out how to disentangle herself from that driving lizard fear so that she can find the truth, which is nothing bad is going to happen, nothing bad has ever happened that she couldn't deal with or hasn't had the support of her boss to deal with. Again, Dee Dee, tell me where I'm off base.
Yeah, no, that's correct.
So does that make sense so far, Aida?
Yeah, no, that really does. And I think, like, if you could help me, like, I mean,
sure.
I think I would love to see how, like, once you even put the hunch out there, like, how you sort of wrap
yeah.
that up with your client.
Sure.
Because I think that that's where I also have trouble.
okay. So right now we have you did some great, you asked some great questions. You got a real clear picture of what's happening for your client. So I applaud you for that. I just want to say that you did a really great job getting there because now we have a very clear sense of what happens the moment she opens her email. So if we could kind of pluck that whole fearful belief out of your brain, which is, I have to deal with this. It's got to be dealt with. I have to deal with this immediately. Can you open your email without that thought? What does that look like for you? If you cannot think the thought, I have to deal with this immediately and I'm going to fuck it all up, pardon my French. How does that feel for you? What do you notice?
Just not stress, not take it on as I have to go. If I could just look at it and go, there it is, and I'm still stressed thinking about it.
Okay, all right.
To be honest, yeah.
Where do you feel it in your body, the stress?
In my gut.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe it?
In my head. Yeah, it's just churning. Like
okay.
A churning gut. Heavy head, like headache.
Mm-hmm. And that's when you think the thought, what, I have to deal with this immediately. I've got to do this right now.
Mm-hmm. And is it going to get done right?
So I would
mm-hmm.
notice that, you know, when these questions come up,
mm-hmm.
you're actually, what's really, I'm guessing, kind of motivating you there is, I'm not going to do this right.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't do it.
I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it right.
I can't do it right. No.
Okay. So when you believe that I can't do it right, your gut starts churning, you get a heavy head. What else? What else do you notice in your body?
My shoulders are tense, very tense. Right. Mm-hmm.
How do you treat yourself when you get an email and you have, like, your inbox is full, I can't do it right, your gut starts churning, you get a heavy head, your shoulders are tense. How do you treat yourself?
I disconnect.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I heard that.
I totally disconnect.
So it's almost like
I leave.
Right out of your body.
I bail on myself. I totally bail on myself.
So I just want to pause and kind of do some commentary for Aida. So you see what I'm doing here is I'm helping Dee Dee connect in her body, and you got really close a few times, but you kept her in her mind. What's the genesis for that thought? I want her to know how it feels in her body, because it's really important that she connects the belief with the physical sensation.
I see, okay.
All right. Sorry, Dee Dee, I just wanted to make sure to point that out. So, I can't do it right. I disconnect. I bail on myself. How do you treat those clients? Like, what do you do when you're holding this, like, oh, my God, I can't do it right?
I still deal with it. I don't bail. I don't bail on the client.
Sorry, I'm not laughing at it. I'm just sort of delighting in this idea. It's like, well, I do it anyway. It's like, oh, gosh, but you do it with. So you do it, but so you come into this communication with a client with churning guts, heavy head, shoulders tense, completely disconnect from your body. So how are you actually treating them? And do you even know how you're treating them? Are you able to tell?
Yeah, no, probably not. I always treat them with, you know, respect and kindness. I could say there are some things that I probably wait to address because I feel that bad that I'm like, okay, yeah. I can't deal with it right now. So yeah, I probably keep them waiting longer than they would like.
So you delay.
That are difficult. Mm-hmm.
You drop out of your leadership, so you're no longer sort of the subject matter expert in this.
Mm-hmm.
You're more of the what? If you're not showing up as sort of the, you're kind and you're respectful, but you're no longer in authority or in a position of authority. What does that do for you and your relationship with the clients?
Well, it's not strong. It's not a strong relationship. They really depend on me to give them answers and follow up. So, yeah.
So you're not dependable?
I'm not as dependable as they would like. Some would like, I would think. No.
Or as you would like, it sounds like. Tell me where.
Or I would like it. Right.
Okay. So now that you have a sense of how that feels and how it treats, you know, sort of how you treat yourself and how you treat them, I'm curious, when you're in this position, how old do you feel? When you find yourself in this state of I can't do it right, how old do you feel?
8.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fascinating to notice how you don't feel, and I'm guessing you're not 8. You're a little
put another number in front of it.
yeah, right. So just notice. So if you cannot think that thought, I can't do it right, how would you show up differently for these clients? You open your email, the thought, I can't do this right, just can't even occur to you.
Mm-hmm.
How do you
yeah, that just felt a lot better. It would, yeah, I mean, I would, it would just be, it would more be like a to-do list rather than, you'd be like, okay, I've got, you know, I've got some things to take care of, and, you know, but without stress. You know, I could just kind of mentally, like, you know, like house chores, you know, like, time to do the laundry, caring about it, but not stressing about it.
Yeah, it's like you want to make sure that you don't put bleach in your laundry when it's dark. But it's not
right.
Like, oh,
I
my
mean,
God, if I don't do this right, I will ruin laundry for all of mankind.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it would be nice to just go, okay, I've just got some, looks like I've got some things on my to-do list today. And there's enough time to get it done. I would feel like there's, you know, there's that thought, there's not enough time, would not appear as well. There would be enough time, I could come in and be dependable, be of service, be the support system between, you know, the doctor.
Okay.
They could rely on me.
So you just turned that belief, this I can't do this, around to like five different things, and they're beautiful. Do you mind if I share them back with you?
Sure.
So when you can't think this thought, I can't do it right, you show up and you know that there's enough time, you know that you are dependable, you know that you are of service, you know that you are there to support, and you know that people can rely on you. There is enough time, I am dependable, I am of service, I am here to support, you can rely on me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that feel as true or truer than that original belief?
It is true.
Yeah, it is. I know.
I have people tell me, you know, it's like, thank God, you know, that you did, you know, thank you. I have people thank me. I have people that are, you know, patients that, you know, look forward to seeing me. It's like, so I don't know where that's coming from. But, I mean, there are a few things that I'm, you know, like any job, things come up. You know, and like I said, there are moving targets. But
when you believe that you have enough time to figure it out, that you are dependable, that you will figure it out, you're dependable to figure it out, because you're of service and there to support, you know it will get done, and that people can rely on you, that doesn't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not, there's no belief there that I have to know everything or I'm doomed.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you bring this into your coaching practice? So I'm pausing again. So Ida, I did a little modified version of thought work there, you can hear, because we're in square three with this issue. Now we want to bring it into action.
Okay.
And so I'm going to ask you, Dee Dee, what are some things that you can do to create an environment that is supportive of the belief, there's enough time, I am dependable, of service, here to support, and you can rely on me? Very practically now, from the moment you walk in the office, sit down at your computer, and turn on your email. Like, what can you do to support that?
I guess I need to have those real thoughts, the real me. I guess I need to say those like a mantra, you know,
while. Yeah, that's one thing. Yeah, I think that's one thing. I think we talked about this a couple of classes ago, is this idea of Shen. We talked about Shenpa, right, which is noticing that you're hooked into that mind habit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was last time. So we get hooked into that mind habit, which is this, which is what's happening here for you, is you're hooked into a pattern, a karmic pattern. Notice that you're hooked. Pause through breath.
Mm-hmm.
So that thought, I can't do it right. Oh, my God, I have to do this. I don't want to do it, but I got to do it. Oh, I'm hooked. That, you know you're hooked. So pause.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then do something differently to begin with, which is maybe doing the mantra. That's what I do. I do a little mantra. I'll get hooked into, like, really painful mind. And, you know, really, it's not just mind. It's like a whole energetic pattern.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I'm hooked.
It is.
So pause. There is enough time. I am dependable. I am of service. Maybe you write it down and put it on your computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would also encourage you, so that's kind of step one, and I'd love for you to practice that over the next 4 days, just practicing that unhooking.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd love, Aida, if you could check back in with your client.
Okay.
Here's what I want to kind of plant as a seed, since you're both coaches, is this is a really great opportunity to use the 3 B's. Because when we're doing a task where there's a huge story around it and there's a lot of kind of pain, there's an opportunity mm-hmm. to do the 3 B's. And so, for example, that might look like boundaries, setting boundaries around your email. I only check it. You can only check it at work. You only work on it for – you know, on issues for 20 minutes at a time, pause, breathe, like just to kind of break some of this habit down.
Yeah.
I don't want to get there yet. I want to give you just that one, but which is noticing the Shen Pa thing, which is basically noticing you're hooked, pausing through breath, and then just working on this little mantra. And then, Aida, if you could work with your client in this square 3 place, it's like, how can you just make that whole thing a lot more manageable, very practically, very, very pragmatically?
Okay.
Because what you're doing now, Dee Dee, is not working.
No. And it's going to make me not want to work there. I'm going to dig so deep into this place.
Yeah.
That I'm just... Yeah, because I already say, maybe this isn't the right job for me, you know. Like, it's a perfect job for me. I love it.
And yet.
Except for when I'm in my lizard brain.
Yeah, and it's fine. It's normal. This is the pattern. There's probably, you were 8 years old, so it was probably something that was instilled at you at a very young age. So we'll pause there. I won't do any more. How was that for you, Dee Dee, as an experience, just kind of from working with Aida through to kind of us wrapping it up?
Yeah, that was good because I wish I could remember how you did it, but we went one place and I could feel like you were asking me, how does it feel I wasn't feeling it yet. I wasn't feeling the freedom from the new thought. But somehow you got me there. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like the first round we did, I don't know what you had me think something. And it was like, how does it feel? Anyway, I know I wasn't there. So
I don't remember,
really,
so I apologize.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but I remember thinking, this, I'm not feeling it. I haven't lifted it yet. But then somehow we got there. So I guess we just kept working with different thoughts.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah.
But you're feeling clarity.
Yeah, I'm feeling clarity, and yes, it's helpful for me to know because I can say I can notice I'm having this thought, and then I can pause. So that's a good for me to pause. To say, okay, there are those thoughts again.
Okay.
And get my mantras.
Good. And then mm-hmm. you can work with Aida to kind of break it down even further. To spend time in just those very practical realms together, like And Aida, you were doing a great job kind of getting a sense for how the set, you know, how DD works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not working for her because she opens the email, she gets overwhelmed. So how can you then, so we're going to work, we've worked on kind of the belief pattern, that energetic pattern. And now you can start getting into really creating boundaries, healthy boundaries around the work itself so that she's not in email the whole time. Or it's like if you get, like, for example, if you get an email from someone that's, like, really challenging, come up with a way to better it. Okay, I'm going to do this one. I'm going to do it right now. I'm not going to delay. And then I'm going to go for a walk and clear my head. Or I'm going to pop on mm-hmm. Facebook for 5 minutes and, you know, laugh at a goofy cat. I don't know. So that's kind of the next step. But for now, let's just work on that first part. Good.
Okay.
Aida, how was that for you since I put you in the hot seat with you were like, ugh.
I think it was okay. I didn't feel totally in the zone, but I'm glad I did it. It was
good.
A little scary,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, I mean, I think you have a really nice energy in terms of you're very present and you're very just very grounded in your energy. Like, I'm really, you know, like I felt like you were really tracking your client. You know, one thing is just to notice, and I already shared this, is just to notice when you're kind of getting sort of the genesis of thoughts, where do you think that comes from? That can be a little bit more of a therapeutic model than coaching, which is totally fine. But just to notice, like, bring your client into her body. How does that feel? What do you notice? You'll notice I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah.
Because, and the reason I did that is because once we start connecting with how shitty it feels to believe that thought, there's a much more willingness to let it go. So rather than focusing on maybe the genesis of the thought, how does that feel in your body? And you got really close a few times. You were like, well, let me just clarify. And then you'd say, you know, where did you think that thought comes from? And instead I'd say, how does that make you feel? Where do you feel that when you believe it?
Mm.
Get them out of the mind, because the mind is sort of a fickle fiend at this point.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yeah. So, yeah, I think generally you just have a great energy and you just, you know, trust yourself a little bit more. And be, you know, we know this is causing stress because it's someplace it's not true. And if you find yourself kind of trying to track down a thought and it's like feels like, oh, gosh, it's just like it keeps, you know, it's like Pandora's box. We just keep on locking thoughts. It might be because you're in a lizard fear. And it's illogical. It makes no sense. Your client makes no sense. Yet it still causes her just as much stress and just as much pain. And so the goal then is to kind of give her a tool to kind of tell the lizard, I got this. I am competent. You know, there is enough time. I am dependable. I am of service. I am here to support, and you can rely on me. That's all directed at the lizard. Like, yeah, I got this because I am all of these things. So if you notice your clients in that place, you know, it's just a great way to kind of shut it down.
Shut it down.
So, yeah, that is something that I noticed, you know, even when, so, for example, in real life, if I were working with her, like, so I put out the hunch, and if she agrees with it or like, maybe she says, okay, yeah, that resonates. So then I felt like what I saw you do, which is, you know, what you were saying too, is you got her into her body, like, right away. So yeah. Does it even matter, like if, that I put out a hunch or not, or?
I think hunches are always really helpful because it gives you more information. It's like it's like a step, check, step. I don't know if you're in the integrity cleanse at all, but there's this sort of, you take a step, you check how it's going, you take another step, you check in. And I think that that's the whole point of hunches is like you're taking a step, you check in with your client, how does that feel, you know, like does that resonate or not, and then you have a chance to kind of course correct. And so I do think hunches are really powerful because you're really creating, I always think of it as like you're creating a shared vision of what the problem is and where you want to proceed together. And so communication is really important. So, yeah, I think having hunches helps you then get clarity on what the actual issue is so then you can then go into the body. Well, you can go into the body anytime, really, but.
So could I have, like, taken that hunch and still kept it very much into in the mind, like, as far as, like, her thoughts? Like, could I have done the work? Like, I guess I'm trying to – I'm wondering – if it was like my choose my own adventure, like could I have gone down to doing the work through that thought? You know, I'm always
Essentially what I did. Yeah. Sorry, I'm always what? What was the thought?
You know, I'm always a failure, and because I felt like I loved seeing you. I mean, I thought it was like watching the Olympics. Like, I mean, I felt like it was like you combined like the work with the mind-body stuff, which I thought was, like, really powerful. And that's where I was, like, I was thinking, you know, I think if it was probably me, I don't know if I would have known how to do that. I probably would have just done either the work or gone just mind body, like as far as like where are you feeling this in your body, like is it shackles on or shackles off, but I don't know if I would have known how to do what you just did.
Think that's the thing is kind of the beauty of coaching is that there are many rivers to the sea, so you could have done straight up thought work on a particular belief with Dee Dee and gotten to a place that might have been very similar as me, or it might have gotten you to the beginning of another river that would have gotten you to where I got. So that's kind of the thing about Practicum 4 is it's kind of that place to experiment where you can kind of, you know, we teach you scales. So if we kind of equate this, make a metaphor of music, when we're teaching you in Coach the Coach, we're teaching you the pragmatics of coaching, we like, you know, the scale of the metaphor tool, like, okay, this is exactly how this goes. And then in Practicum 4, it's really the art of what I think of as coaching improv, because a real session, when I have a real session, it is just like what I did with Dee Dee. Sometimes I will do thought work beginning to end in its sort of pure incarnation. But more often than not, when someone is in square three, like Dee Dee, she does this job all the time. This is something she's continually doing. This is clearly something that happens a lot for her. I tend to improvise the work by bringing it much more into, I'll take a little bit of the work. I'll go right to a turnaround. I'll bring in some mind-body. Your sessions, your real sessions with clients can absolutely look just like that. But if you don't know how to do that or you're not ready to even try it, you could absolutely do the pure work and get to a very similar place, or at least the beginning of a place where you could start to do some of these other things with Dee Dee. Either way, I think you know, part of the challenge with Coach the Coach is we only have so much time. And so I kind of will show you how to get there a little bit faster. It's not a comment on your skills as much as it's like, okay, we can get there faster, and here's a shortcut, a shorter river that you can go down. Does that make sense?
No, I loved seeing it. I thought it was amazing to watch and or hear, and I thought it was beautiful, so thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for kicking it off. So we don't have much time. I just want to ask if there are any questions or comments.
So just to, it's Dee Dee, just to clarify that, so you went into the mind-body in the part where who would you be without that thought? Or do you go into the mind-body, how do you react when that happens? On three or four? I can't remember.
Well, just to be clear, it is actually part of the work
mm-hmm.
that you will ask how it feels, like
mm-hmm.
what emotions arise, how does it feel in your body, like what physical sensations arise when you think about it. Have you guys downloaded the facilitation guide for the work? Do you guys know where that is? If not, I can share it out on the forum.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
Can you share it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the facilitation guide, there are sub-questions to question number 3. So the first question, is it true? The second question, can you absolutely know that it's true? And again, remember from the session that we had with, it was Lisa and Rachel, right? It's okay, you know, it's okay to really sit with that first thought, is it true? Joanna actually did it. It was last time we were talking with Joanna. She really spent time. Is it true? Rather than just immediately being like, nope, it's not true, like that mind, she really felt into it. And so it's okay if the answer is it true, is yes, because that's the whole point of the second question. And the point of that second question is much more meditative. All right, so can you absolutely know? They might still say yes. The point
mm-hmm.
from question 1 and 2 isn't to get them to say no, they can't absolutely know it's true. It's then to move into question 3, which is how do you react? What happens when you believe that thought? What happens in your mind? Does it bring peace or stress? What emotions arise? How does it feel in your body? So I didn't actually, I mean, I did mind-body work because I'm a mind-body coach, but we're all mind-body coaches, or we all can be, in that that third question is really designed for you to be do like a body meditation, like a meditation on how does this feel? How do you react? One of the questions is, do any obsessions or addictions begin to appear when you believe that thought? How do you
mm-hmm.
treat the person in this situation when you believe that thought? How do you treat yourself? How do you treat others? Right? So
mm-hmm.
it's this full meditation. It's not just mind-body. But give yourself permission in that third question to really spend time painting a picture of what your life looks like when you believe that thought. Use your tools.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense, Dee Dee?
Yeah. Thank you.
The thing is that I did an abbreviated version because of time and because of what we had. What I had to work with is, rather than going, we did who would you be without that thought, and then I kind of asked you, you know, what your life would look like, if you couldn't, I didn't write down exactly what I wrote, but it was essentially that idea that, you know, what would your life look like without it? Who would you be? How would you treat yourself? How would you treat them if you couldn't believe that thought? And in it, you just gave me turnarounds.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stopped there because you already had it. And then I brought in this
right.
Shenpa, which I love because I'm a big fan of it. So I just want to clarify, I'm not going super off script when it comes to the work. I'm just using slightly different language and marrying it with some of the other things I've learned in my journey. So you all absolutely can do that. Are there any questions?
Right.
Since we're kind of breaking it down here and we've only got about 5 minutes left, any questions?
I have a question. This is Sarah again.
Sure.
So when I do the work, I tend to, with other people in my little group, other coaches and with clients, I tend to want to take them really in their body and in questions 2 and 3, and I should have probably asked this a long time ago, but this is what I do. I take them in their body and ask them to go back to an experience, whatever comes to them first, whether it was something that happened yesterday or months ago,
mm-hmm.
where they had that thought and what was that experience like in a bit of
sure.
a meditative state, and then what is it like with, so it becomes kind of a longer thing. Is that okay that I do it that way?
Yeah. I work with Erin Kutchel, who's becoming a certified facilitator for the work, and so she's, I wanted to work with her because she's using it in a very pure way so that I could become a better coach and just a better person. And she absolutely spends time asking, like, do you have, like, what images do you see past and future? She actually asks, like, can you think of when this thought might have first occurred to you? like we were working a belief around how my father doesn't care enough about me to protect me. Mm-hmm. And so she actually asked, can you think of, because we were working in a very general sense. I didn't have a particular instance that we were talking about, but she rooted it in a particular instance. And you'll notice I did that with Dee Dee as well. It's like the problem is when we start getting too general, we want to give a specific, and that's what you're doing, Sarah, right? sorry, I got so into it. That's what you're doing, Sarah, is when you take that, you're rooting it in a real circumstance for them so they can identify it for the future.
Okay.
Oh,
great.
I know. Yeah, so it's a great question.
Sometimes when I'm doing it, I notice that people really, when I have them close their eyes and take deep breaths and get in that place, actually in the place instead of the watcher of it where the trigger happened and they had the thought, that they become incredible, they go right back to it.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Yep.
Like, I feel like they're having the trigger in front of me, which is really great because I get to hear a lot of the thoughts that come up around the thought and the feeling.
Yeah, I think that's really important because you're going to then take them to what, you know, again, we're working in tangibles, like tangible instances, real circumstances, rather than always working in theoretical, because in coaching, especially, at least in my experience, if we work too much in the intangibles and the theoreticals, we're not actually dissolving anything. We're not actually getting at the root of a belief system. And so one thing I will say in my experience is we never want to encourage someone to make the pain bigger than what it actually is. So this is sort of a mind-body thing, is that if I had said to Dee Dee, it's like, I want you to feel, tell me how you feel, you know, oh, and I've got this gut churning, heavy head, shoulders are tense. I would never ask her to make that feeling bigger than what it actually is, because that can actually become a bigger trigger for people. Like, let it be right sized. Let it just be the size that it is. So you don't need to.
What do you mean by that?
Well, sometimes people are like, okay, feel that gut churning in the heavy head. Let it fill the room. Let yourself really feel it intensely.
Okay. I get what you're saying.
So especially when you're taking, because you were talking about triggers, like you don't want to take them back to something and then make it bigger than it. Like, it doesn't need to be. You can work with it in that form.
Okay. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Sorry. It's just I've heard sometimes people will do that. I've watched people kind of be like, okay, go back to that instance. Feel it. Now make it bigger. No, don't make it bigger.
But you can if they don't describe adjectives, if you want them to be in their body and they're not, you can ask them, you know, to start to get into those feelings.
Yeah.
Them, right?
Feel it. Absolutely. Feel it.
Okay.
Don't be like, okay, now I want you to feel it bigger.
Okay.
Because remember, all sometimes right. They're numbing themselves for a reason to protect themselves. But yeah, absolutely. Like, okay, so where do you feel it? Oh, well, you know, it kind of, like, I feel it all over. It's like, well, can you name more specifically? Like, do you feel it in your ankles? Oh, no, I don't feel it in my ankles. Okay, can you feel it in your belly? Oh, yeah. Describe it. That can be really very supportive of what you're talking about there, Sarah,
okay.
In terms of,
thank
you know,
for
really
clarifying
support
that.
It. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Thank you. Any other questions? Sarah, did I answer all your questions? Did you have anything else?
No, that was it. Thank you so much for answering those.
Okay. So I'm going to let you guys go just because trying to start a session sort of 15 minutes into the end of class doesn't work, and so I appreciate you guys hanging out. I personally find it really useful when we go into a session this deep and kind of deconstruct it, so hopefully you found it useful as well. I'm going to share the facilitation guide for the work, which includes those sub-questions around question number 3. You know, Katie will very much, when she's working on that question number 3, she will ask other questions. She will spend a tremendous amount of time just going in. Anything else? Because what more often than not people could, they could, you know, it's like when you give them the space, just like Sarah, you were kind of talking about, when you give them the space to really be with how do you react, what happens when you believe that thought, you're really kind of unpacking a whole lot of stuff. And it's okay to keep asking, you know, letting there be those pauses, letting there be that energy. It's, you know, as long as you have time in the session, of course. So I'll share that with you. These are just guidelines. You don't have to ask every sub-question, just to be very clear. These are meant to be a starting place for you to begin to delve deeper into that. You know, what does your life look like with this belief system? Any final questions or thoughts? All right. So here's what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that file out there, and I'm also going to ask for volunteers for our next class in 2 weeks. I need 2 coaches, 2 clients. Even if you've gone before, don't worry about it. I'd love if you could put your name in the hat for coaching or for either to coach or to be coached. Anything else? All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging in. Thanks for going on that one. That was fun. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Saida. Okay. Bye-bye.